It is very good afternoon. Well, no, it's not afternoon. It's actually evening time. That's what it is. It's 8 o'clock in the evening. I know it's a little bit different. Normally we're on at 12 o'clock in the day. But, you know, I suppose when you're out campaigning and canvassing, you can't squeeze everything in. And, of course, we're getting closer now. Only a little over 2 weeks before you actually go to the polls and vote in the local and the European elections. Of course, I want you to vote for me. Absolutely, by the way. There are some great videos online, by the way, and we talked last week on how to vote, the best way to vote. And let me just give you one more tip in relation to that. It's quite simple. Vote for the people you want to get elected. Don't vote for anybody else, because the votes can't transfer to somebody if you don't actually give them a number. Don't spoil your vote. Somebody said to me yesterday, by the way, can I put an X in the box? Is that okay? No, you can't. You must put a number in the box of your preference. So, for example, if you're voting for me first, a number one. If you have another candidate in mind that you think, well, he might be good as well, vote number two. If you have another candidate in mind, number three, and keep going down the sheet, picking people that you actually like and you would like to see either in the European Parliament or in the local elections. If there's somebody you don't want to see, you just leave them out. Simple as that. Because otherwise, votes will transfer to them if those other people above don't get elected. So just be cautious about how you vote. All right, very important. But remember, the person you're actually voting for is the one you're giving your number one vote to. The only reason the people below will get your votes is if that person doesn't get a seat and the votes are transferred down. It's quite simple. By the way, thank you to everybody from all over the country. People are saying I must be the busiest campaigner at the moment. I am. I swear to God, they have my diary full. We're going out everywhere. We've been across in Tallaght, Kilmarnock, Donnycarney, Kilmarnock, or Donnymeath, Talla, Temple Oge, Croke Park, Parnell Park. We've been to loads of events. It's just crazy. I never imagined it would be so busy, but it's been absolutely wonderful. I'm going to take donations for a new pair of shoes, by the way. Can I take, because I've done so much walking? It's good exercise, isn't it, over the last 3 or 4 weeks? And I said only 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks to go. The Dirty Tricks, of course, by the press and by other politicians started from the very start, because they don't want to see me being elected. It would be their worst nightmare to see me elected. But remember, the government that we have today and its opposition, it's weak opposition, and they're not on your side. I am on your side. I promise I'm on your side. And I won't do a disappearing act for 4.5 years. You know me. I'm here every day doing this podcast. The podcast will obviously have to move to different days, because obviously I won't be here for a lot of the time and I have to go to work to represent you. So we will be moving the podcast, but it will still happen. It will still happen live. We'll still be putting it out, and I'll be telling you every single week what I'm doing and who, what I'm voting for, what I'm discussing, what I'm debating, what Europe are doing, and I'll tell you how I feel about everything. I get your input constantly all the time. That is why I'm making a promise to you that I will do that. Now, today, of course, by the way, you can text or call in about anything you want at any stage. The number, as usual, is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. If you ever want to text in or you want to call in, it doesn't matter what it's about. We're quite happy to take your calls and anything. But we do kind of lead the conversation in some way. And I'm reading from the Irish Independent. I can't avoid the topic. I know we talk about it a lot, but unfortunately, it's in the news a lot. Actually, Mario Rosenstock said that to me the other day in a podcast. He said, like, you know, is immigration the number one issue? And I said, it is, but the government are helping it by being the number one issue by constantly making bad decisions every single day and making it the top news story every single day. And I'm reading from the Irish Independent. It says, there will be proper housing for asylum seekers built at Thornton Hall. This is according to the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. Migrants will be housed in military-style tents at a portion of the site at Thornton Hall in a number of weeks as the government struggles to house record numbers coming in and seeking international protection. Thornton Hall is expected to be one of the first of many asylum seeker camps around the country, as a number of the other sites are now being examined. The site currently costs $30,000 a year. Now, don't buy into this one, right? According to the government, the site's costing $30,000 a year. That's because it's empty and it's just a field, essentially, at the moment. But it has water and electricity, and it also has CCTV. So, for just, you know, the rates and the water, just to have the facility there is $30,000. As soon as people start living there and using those facilities, those costs are going to go up dramatically. It is envisaged that we would provide facilities there. Initially, yes, of a tented variety, but ultimately I think we need proper facilities, but obviously they're going to take some time to build, Minister Martin said while speaking in the southern Lebanon. He said he did not want to say what the specific nature of the structures would be. When asked, it'll be prefabricated accommodation. Or will it be, he's asked, sorry, will it be prefabricated accommodation? But he is saying housing for asylum seekers. So he's using the word housing. Of course, initially, it will be tens of Thornton Hall and other sites as well. Fundamentally, what we're looking at is more proper and more effective accommodation. Finance Minister Michael McGrath said up to 30,000 asylum seekers could come into the country if the current numbers continue. There are around 600 migrants are coming into the state every single week looking for protection. I'm talking to some people now. I've been out on the campaign trail, and I've been talking to people about this. And obviously, it is the number one issue for many people. And it affects other issues too, like housing, and it affects services and everything else. But some people are saying, well, look, at least it's better than the tents on the canal. I don't know if that's what you believe. Whereas others would say this is not the solution either, and we should be taking a more proactive approach to the crisis. Now, I did talk to one man yesterday, and his take on it was that it was unfair to put that facility near any housing. And there is a small amount of housing around Thornton Hall, and I'm sure the residents there are not too pleased. That would, you know, anybody wouldn't be happy with. Because, let's be clear, if I asked you honestly, would you like a large accommodation centre, you know, 100 yards or, I don't know, 500 yards from your home? If you said to me, I wouldn't have a problem with that, where there's thousands of people that you don't even know, I don't have a problem with that. You're a liar, because that's just not the case. And anybody who says they wouldn't have an issue with it is either virtue signalling or they're lying to me. Now, I understand it has to go somewhere. But Thornton Hall, of course, was originally meant to be a badly needed prison. Bertie Ahern, of course, purchased the land on behalf of the state many years ago. We never got the prison. We should get the prison, but we never got it. So what do you think of the government's plan? That's the number, or that's the question, should I say. The number is 085-100-2255. What do you think of the government's plan? Let me know what you think now. Let me go to, if I can, Morris first. Let me see, let me switch him on here, or turn him on, as they say. Morris, hi, how are you?
Evening, Noel. How are you doing?
Good. Morris, and can I say, firstly, before I start, Morris, thank you very much indeed in coming out and helping us campaign the other day as a volunteer. You're a wonderful human being.
Listen, thanks very much, and I'm just grateful that you came to the Blanchardstown Centre so that people could meet you. And an added bonus is, since you were out here, all the houses have gone up $5,000 in value. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. And Morris, not only did he come out and campaign, but he was good enough to invite me back to his house, myself and my wife, where we were treated to a wonderful, probably the best cup of tea I've ever had in my life, because it was so badly needed, and a lovely cake. Thank you, Morris.
Yeah, and Martin was there as well. He was another great volunteer that got up and get out to make a difference. You're doing a great job. If you want to go and do something, get up off your backside and go and do it. And you're proving that hard work will pay off. And they are running scared of you. So just keep up the good work. We've 2 weeks left. Noel Boylan, number one. Vote all the way. Let's make Dublin a better place to live for everybody.
Now, getting back to the topic, Morris, you know, nobody wants to see people in canal or down along the canal. But look, on a serious level, it is inhumane to have people sitting like that. You know, that's not their fault. They've been given the opportunity to come to the country because we have a system with, you know, a million loopholes in it and a million holes in the system. So how do we deal with that system? Is Thornton Hall the answer, where we have these big, huge military-style barracks-type places where lots of people are living?
Yeah, you understand. I feel sorry for the people living out there because the government had neglected that site for years. It was supposed to be a prison and it's been left. And now they're that desperate. They're clinging at straws or grasping at straws. How can we get them out of Dublin? How can we get them off the canal? So a big open space like that that can be monitored, that can be made secure, and there's no danger to the locals, no matter how big or small the locals are. And to be honest with you, Noel, if people don't make the grade and they're deported, it's right beside the airport. So straight out onto a plane and back to where you came from or wherever you want to go. And I think that's the way to do it. But I would definitely, because there's hundreds coming in, I believe there's another 100 tents on the canal again, I would electronically tag every one of them because they're illegal and they have no paperwork in this country.
When you say they're illegal, they may be illegal entering the country if they have no paperwork, but then they claim asylum, so they're considered asylum seekers. Yeah.
But, you know, if somebody's looking for asylum, they're fleeing the country, and the only way to get out of a country when you're fleeing it is to have paperwork to get out. Don't be coming out saying, living in England for 10 or 12 or 14 months, and then going, Jesus, I don't want to go to Rwanda. I'll nip across the border into the north and into Ireland. Should they give you a house down there? That's why they're coming.
Well, I mentioned there, I think it was last week, that I did interview when we were down there taking, you know, a video and some pictures. I did interview one man and he was from Pakistan. And I said, you know, I just asked him, I said, look, you know, the best of luck to you, but why are you here? And he said, because I'll get an apartment. And I said, who told you that? He said, my friends that came over a few months ago said they got an apartment. So
there you go.
So they're hearing it from other people who are saying, look, come here. They're not going to kick you out. They'll eventually find somewhere. You might have to put up with living in a tent for a while, but they'll eventually find somewhere for you. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I'm going to tell you what he said to me.
Yeah, exactly. This is what the word goes out. You had another guy live on television, on radio programs. Oh, I lived in Birmingham for 6 months.
Oh, that's right, Jeff.
It's a terrible city. I came here. So they're only the tip of the iceberg. Did you hear the latest now about all the Ukrainian families, 130, being put out of hotels up in Leitrim?
Mm-hmm.
That's breaking now. So they're dumping people out onto the street. They've really lost control. And somebody is going
around. Why do you think nobody's losing their job? Morris, when you say they've lost control, it's quite clear exactly. They've lost control. So why do you think, you know, Helen McEntee, Rodrigo Gorman, or indeed the government haven't, you know, fallen apart at this stage? Why do you think nobody's losing their job when you see such bad decisions being made?
Nobody wants to take responsibility because it's a three-headed government snake that stole power off the people, and they're running scared. And you've already seen the main contributor for Fine Gael over the last 10 years. He jumped ship. He got out because it was getting too hot. And then at the end of the day, people willing to step into his shoes to try and grab and see if they can salvage something? No. What you do is you get into the highest position you can in the country. And then when you're out, you'll get a bigger pension. The higher up you are in the ministerial office, the bigger your pension. I've done my research on it, and that's exactly what the game is all about. Get out with the biggest pension. That's what they're doing. So they're enslaving the rest of us to make sure that they're kept in the lap of luxury. Every person that was at fault for ruining this country when the IMF came in are sitting back laughing at us on their big fat pensions. But do politicians have consciences? No, because they wouldn't knock at your door and ask you for a vote after what he did in the last election.
Well, we've seen the results of that, with some politicians being basically run out of areas. Some of the videos going around online showing, you know, Sinn Féin being run out of areas, etc., etc. So a lot of politicians are facing the wrath of the general public. Now, I don't encourage people, by the way, to take the law into their own hands or be violent in any way, but you can be vocal. There's no harm in being vocal. Morris,
exactly.
Listen,
there's no need to get violent.
Thank you very much indeed, Morris. I appreciate you coming on. Thank you for all your work. All right. Now, I've got to be very quick because I believe there's about 14 or 15 people want to come on. Sorry, Tony. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Noel. How are you? Are you okay?
Well, I'm good. Yeah, I'm tired, but I'm good.
You got it good. I had some leaflets left over from the last time because I went to the Wellfest last week and I didn't get the text off there. It was in a different group. But I had a few leaflets left over. And I was down at the Springsteen concert yesterday. And you got a great reception off any dubs that we spoke to.
That's great. Thank you very much indeed. Even Bruce Springsteen is voting for me, is he?
Even Bruce Springsteen fans are there. And they were queuing. The queue was the whole length of Clonliffe Road and the width of it. It was absolutely ridiculous, it was. But we started asking people if they were from Dublin. They says, yeah.
I'm on fire. Yes. Okay. So
that's now we've done a very sneaky in behind the curtain as well. We didn't
Have
any leaves. We are sorry to do it on the slide, but we got it done anyway.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed, Tony, and I really appreciate it. Tony, getting back to what the government are doing. So they're moving the problem from one place, essentially, to another. Mind you, their argument is we're going to put more permanent structures up with services rather than having them in tents in the canals. Is that the answer?
No, Noel, they need to deport these people. Or better still, they need to stop them at source, stop them from coming in.
Yeah, well, we talked about putting up a border the other day, and that's just, a lot of people just said that wasn't practical. So how do you do that?
No, it's ridiculous, because what's happening now down in Newtown, Mount Kenzie, is there's dishwasher water, washing machine water, and things like that flowing out into the roads. There's a lot of farmland down there that's going to be contaminated, and there was never an environmental impact study done on that site. So the people in Newtown, Mount Kennedy, is trying to go down that road but to try and get it stopped. And also, right facing where the site is in Newtown, Mount Kennedy, is across the road from where a young lady was murdered.
Oh, gosh.
Some years ago by an Indian national with a British passport.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the story, Tony, I'm going to be honest with you, but go on. And so the relevance of that being... Okay.
But just like you asked Morris as well about why have people in the government not lost their jobs, like Helen McEntee and Rodrigo Gorman, for the absolute appalling job that they've done. And I firmly believe that they have so much shit on each other
Like Leo, they kind of got out when the going's good.
Yeah, it's got the whole house of cards.
Okay. But I mean, okay, so when you say the solution is to cut it off at source, we've talked the other day about, you know, a border in Northern Ireland, which a lot of people said wouldn't be practical. Some said it would, and it would be only temporary. Because you have to remember, of course, the majority of people that we're seeing currently at the moment, those numbers of 500 or 600 a week, are coming in from the United Kingdom.
Right, Niall. If that's not possible, just don't give them any incentive to come to the Republic of Ireland. There's too many incentives to come to the Republic of Ireland. Give them absolutely nothing. Stop all this handing out with tents. The tents are going around like a merry-go-round. They're being picked up on a Wednesday and dished out again. Now, these tents down at the canal now are going to be picked up again, put in a skip. The NGOs are going to get paid a pile of money to get another load of tents, hand them out again. Stop. Things,
and by the way, they're trespass tents. They're not that cheap, can I just point out. These are not cheap Lidl or Aldi tents. You know what I mean? Yeah, and by the way, that's taxpayers' money, which they're giving them the tents, destroying the tents, and then giving them more tents. It's just pointless exercise. Yeah. Tony, listen, I have to move on. I have loads of calls to go to. Tony, thank you very much indeed, and thank you for all your help as well. Let me go to Nuala. Nuala, hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all now. I was just looking at the situation. You know, people forget that the EU gave Erdogan in Turkey $60 billion to hold back the the people that were coming from Syria and all these different countries. But I think that that's like a sieve, because I think these people are coming, they were originally coming across into Greece and whatever, but now they seem to be coming to Europe, and maybe from France then to England. And But besides the point, I think our own government doesn't have the guts to govern. You know, if you have an emergency in Ireland in relation to the ordinary housing, if you have 60,000 people on the HAP scheme, that's not permanent housing.
What I find bizarre is that they seem to accept the fact that there could be 30,000 people a year, right? They seem to accept that fact. They also seem to accept the fact, when you listen to predictions by governments who are looking for your votes, that we can build 30,000 houses a year. That's roughly around the figure that we can actually build, and that's what they're doing at the moment. So how are we going to manage if the population is increasing, and we also, on top of that, have 30,000 extra people coming in every single year, and we can only build 30,000 houses a year? Where is everybody going to live?
Yeah, and the people that are already on the HAP scheme,
that's
because
there's
no social housing. And then everybody that comes in are entitled to family unification. If they get, like, 60,000 people got Irish citizenship last year. Now, some of them might already be working here, but they're entitled to bring their family as well. And those who have went through the asylum process, they're entitled to bring family unification. So I think it is, they have to take a good look at it and realise, do we want to replace our own population? Because that's the way it seems to be going.
Is that your fear, Nuala, that the demographic of Ireland will completely change? Because we do have to accept that we live in a different world. And many people come here, by the way, through legitimate, you know, sources. They get visas or whatever, and they work in our healthcare system, and they work all across the country, and that's vital because we need workers. So our demographic had already changed somewhat. But, I mean, you believe that it would change dramatically if we continue down this road?
Oh, I think it would. Like, I don't have any fear of it, really. But I'm just wondering, like, all the money they spend on trying to revive the Irish language. It's a joke, really, when you come to think of it. What, reviving it for who, or reviving it for what? You know what I mean? Like, we have to be realistic.
So your point is there'll be nobody to speak, is it? There'll be nobody to speak the Irish language in 50 years, is the point you're making.
Well, they wouldn't be interested in it. You see, the thing is, are we a sovereign country? Are we just an add-on to the EU, or an add-on to England?
Well, it's quite clear our role in the EU, and this is, of course, why I want to go to Europe, to make sure that Ireland is prioritised in Europe and to make sure Europe works for us rather than the other way around. But it's quite clear that we're diluting our sovereignty. We're also eroding our neutrality by being part of Europe as it expands. I don't agree with the expansion of the EU, by the way. I mean, there has to be a limit. It's almost like the Eurovision Song Contest, where you let Australia in in as well. I don't agree with Ukraine joining the EU either. So insane, because what will happen is according to it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, our sovereignty is diluted even more and our neutrality is eroded even more. So I don't agree with that expansion. But I do believe the EU can work for us.
Yeah, but we need really strong voices, because we're an MEP is one of 724 MEPs, so we need to have strong voices.
Obviously,
strong
we're only 2%. Ireland are only 2% of the representation, right? So realistically, what we need is not just here in Ireland, but we need all across Europe to see different MEPs being voted in, which are more centrist rather than being all to the left, because that's the problem we've had for the last 5 or 10 years. And all you got to do is look at our own MEPs. You've never seen such a biggest bunch of lefties. But look, Nuala, thank you for that, Nuala. Sorry, I'm really pushed for time. I've got to go to Rory. Rory, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, how are you doing?
Good. Rory, the story of the Irish Independence Day, let's focus back on that again. So moving people away from the canals and giving them, you know, I don't know, a tent initially, obviously a better tent, a bigger tent, but eventually they're talking about building structures. I don't know what structures are, what that means. Houses, something, I don't know. A good idea?
No, Niall, I don't agree with that at all. We move them, if we're going to move them to a bigger tent, put the bigger tent out at the airport, put the APO temporarily out there at the airport, process them out there. Even if we have to buy or hire a plane, have it on standby, put them on the plane and get them out.
Okay,
we have enough people here. Our kids are leaving because wages are getting increasing and we're bringing in cheaper labour. This doesn't make sense. It all goes back to globalisation. They don't care about it.
Okay, so out of the 600 people that come here, for example, I would imagine most are economic migrants. But there may be some genuine asylum seekers in there. I'm assuming that you're okay with that if there are genuine asylum seekers.
I'm fine with that. We've some great immigrants here. They've came in and helped us with the country. But these ones are coming in, destroying our passports. If you don't have your passport, you're processed out at the airport.
Mm. I don't see why we can't do that processing quickly. I can't see why they can't do that quickly, to be honest with you.
Cross it quickly. Niall, I'm from the north, so I am. All my life, I wanted a United Ireland. I've lived in Dublin for the last 23 years. I've always voted for Sinn Féin. I will never be voting for them again. I'm voting for you. United Ireland is gone to me now. I want Ireland back. Never mind United Ireland. Mm-hmm. Our kids can talk about that when we sort this out.
Yeah.
That's gone. We need to save Ireland. Never mind getting United Ireland.
Here's the thing.
United to what? United to a split cult? United to what? What are we going to be united to?
But here's the thing. Can you answer me a question, Rory? Why? Because you would have a better sense of it than I would. Why do you think this is not happening in Northern Ireland? Why do you think they're bypassing Northern Ireland and not staying there? Because it's more attractive down here?
The wages down here. I'm attracted to down here because the money was always bigger. I've always wanted to live in Ireland as well.
Yeah.
I just been through the troubles and all the north, and I came to Dublin when I was in Australia for a few years, thinking back here, and I came to Dublin and I just liked it down here. I wanted to stay down here.
Because the High Court has already said in Northern Ireland that we won't be sending people back to Rwanda. So Northern Ireland doesn't apply. If they can get from, say, Birmingham or London or wherever it is.
But I don't want them there either. It's the north of Ireland. To me, it's just Ireland. I don't want them there either. I don't want them. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they're not coming there. And I don't want them here either.
Yeah. Okay. And what do you say to people who will say to you, I wouldn't say it to you, but what do you say to people who are, you know, out there saying, you know, the kind of socialist parties, et cetera, saying, oh no, we just need to process people quickly and we need to get them into accommodation somewhere and find them, you know, jobs and do everything we can?
I think they're puppets for Europe, puppets for the Klaus Schwab and his cronies that's trying to globalize the world.
Hmm.
They'll all be forgotten about when this was saying that they have owned nothing and be happy, bringing in all these big corporations and buying up all our apartments and renting them to us. They don't want us to own our own houses.
Well, that's what somebody said to me the other day, by the way, in relation, you know, as a European MEP, what could you do about housing? Well, there's an awful lot you could do about legislation, about what you just actually said, which is big corporations buying up and, you know, taking all our properties, our apartments, and, you know, and holding on to them for 2 years before they even rent them out. So there's a huge amount you could do from that aspect. That would free up an awful lot of properties.
And that's why I want you over there, Niall.
Mm-hmm.
I want you voting against it, and then I want you to align with like-minded people over there from other countries stop these policies.
Well, I think that's the answer all the time. Here. When people say to me, sure, you're not much good on your own, I won't be on my own. There are other like-minded people there. And I think this year, more so, there'll be more like-minded people this year.
But people need to understand that. People doesn't understand Europe. They don't understand that you'll be over there talking to like-minded people and voting these laws at source, stopping them from getting accepted beforehand.
And you know what? And I promise people, apart from anything else, you know, even if people say to me, well, you know, what are you going to do? Well, I'll be part of other groupings who will have a lot more power than I will, right? But in saying that, you will also be on a platform, a much bigger platform than I'm on at the moment. I will embarrass the shite out of the Irish government if they don't play games, or play the game, should I say.
Good man, that's
I
what I want.
I will actually embarrass the shite, because it sickens me that, you know, I'm sitting in a room, say, and which I did the other day, with loads of other MEPs, and they've all been MEPs before, or they've been TDs, or whatever it is they've been, right? And they look down on us. I've talked to 250,000 callers in all my years on radio, and they're just everyday people, just normal everyday people. I guarantee you, none of them have ever spoken to 250,000 people. Actually, we'd be lucky if it was 250, because the only people they talk to are like-minded politicians who look after themselves.
Because the perception they have, Niall, is, will be grand. They always vote for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael when it comes to actually doing the vote. People need to get out of that mindset and vote them out.
Rory, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate your vote as well, by the way.
Who your mother and father voted for, vote for yourself.
Rory, thank you very much indeed, and thank you for your vote, by the way. I appreciate it too. Let me go to Nicholas. Nicholas, hi, how are you doing?
Hello, Niall, and good to speak to you. I pretty much agree with so much that's been said, including your observations on neutrality and sovereignty. I really don't think anything is going to change until we get some serious change in the political people that are representing us, which is why we need the likes of yourself and plenty of others as well.
I keep saying to people, this election is going to be like a referendum. It's a referendum to say no to the government. That's what it is.
It'll be a judgment call from the people, I think, and I think it's going to be a powerful, and I can't wait for it, because all of the things that are like what you're the specific topic you're talking about now, that is such an obvious setup by O'Gorman. You know, he has the NGOs lined up, he channels them in, causes public outrage, and then feels justified in moving them to Newtown and Kennedy or somewhere else like that. You know, he thinks he has the weight of public opinion with him. He said he has a comprehensive plan, I think, in the clip you showed.
Yep.
Comprehensive plan? For what? You know? And I think, I don't have a solution, but I think a quicker turnaround of these people who are coming without documentation, maybe even set up Baldonnell as a deportation point, or have a rapid turnaround.
What I can't understand is they keep saying, you know, like they're boasting that we've gone from having a turnaround of 5 years, which it was with the old direct revision system, right? To a turnaround of 6 months. Hang on, 6 months? That's ridiculous. Is that what you're aiming for, is 6 months? And they say, well, oh, you know, you need staff, administration, buildings, all that. And I'm going, hold on a second. During COVID-19, when they had to set up track and trace, remember that? They set it up overnight. The same with vaccination centres. They could set them up, you know, with, you know, 200 staff overnight. Mm-hmm. So why can't we do that now? Why can't we? This is an emergency. The future of our country is at stake. It is an emergency.
We can. There is going to be major, major social unrest in this country. And it's very, very close. That's my sense of it.
Yeah, and nobody wants to see that, by the way. Nobody ever wants to see
that. Not at all. No, nobody wants that. And like in that clip you showed of him, I think he was being interviewed by Gripped or something, but he said he had a comprehensive plan. But where's the transparency?
Can you let us in on the plan?
Tell us what can explain it, please.
Yeah,
you know, explain what is it? You know, this is all.
Well, it's all quite vague, because if you look at what Micheál Martin said, and I'm just reading it here again from the Irish Independent. You know, and he said he did not want to say what the specific nature of the structures will be when asked if it would be prefabricated accommodation, but he did say there will be proper housing for asylum seekers built in Thornton Hall. Now that this is what. And I explained this again to Mario Rosenstock the other day when I was on his podcast. I said, this is what's happening. The government are doing things and taking steps and saying things that's pissing people off. Because, you know, I spoke to a woman here a while ago, and her son and his wife and their baby were living in her house because they couldn't afford a house of their own. And she was pissed off because a Ukrainian had got a modular home up the road. And she said, my son and daughter-in-law would love that, but they can't get that. And by saying, you know, we're going to build proper housing for asylum seekers, that winds people up because they go, I'm on the housing list for the last 20 years, you know, or 10 years or whatever. Why can't I get one? You know, I mean, why couldn't we, like when we had, before this kind of crisis really kicked off about 3 years ago, we had 14 or 12,000 people who were on the housing list, or should have been on the housing list, in temporary accommodation, who were considered to be homeless. And we didn't take emergency steps like this to do something about it. Why not?
You know what I mean? I mean, this, and it shows you, it is, it, like you said, with the COVID and all that, the rapid response, it is possible to do it, but there isn't the will there. And this is what.
But there must be a will, Nicholas, because they must be looking at their jobs. They must be saying to themselves, the people hate us at the moment. They must be saying that.
There's a huge, there are so many huge missing pieces to this puzzle, Niall, as to what the motivation of O'Gorman and McEntee and people like that are. What's really going on? What are their, you know, plans for themselves? If they're willing to cause such havoc and mayhem in the country, do they really say, oh, well, I'm only here to just, I'll do as much damage as I can now, I get the hell out.
I've only got a year left anyway. Sure, the elections are coming next year. Sure, I'll be out and I'll have a nice pension.
The level of indifference, when you hear it, like O'Gorman speaking in that piece, like the man is disconnected from reality.
But most politicians are.
Yeah, well.
And that's why, you know what, when people turn around to me and they say, oh, what's it like to be a politician, right? I hate the word. I actually despise it. It's almost like a dirty word now. I say to people, actually, I'm not a politician. I'm a broadcaster and I just want to go over and represent people.
But the one thing you've done professionally for years is communicate. And I think, and you've said this a couple of times about what one of the things that you intend to do, I know there's plenty of things you intend to do, but is to maintain regular communication. And that's really, really important. And I hope you do it when you get in, because
I've never broken a promise. Let me tell you, Nicholas, I've never broken a promise.
Yeah, I completely trust you on that one. But I think the people here living in this country feel like they've been basically deserted, left by these MEPs. And I mean, when I look at some of the promotional videos, the money they're putting into promotional videos, and it's like they're like lunatics. They're like nutcases, you know. Some of the stuff they're saying and the way they're presenting themselves, you know, it's.
Okay, well, stay there for a second. Let me just go to Jessica well. Stay there, Nicholas. Jessica, hi, how are you?
Hiya.
How you doing? And thank you, Jessica. Jessica arrived while I was campaigning in Northside Shopping Centre today, and she brought me a large can of Red Bull, just like this one I have hidden here. Thank you, because she knew I drank Red Bull.
Well, I hope it kept you going.
It did, yes. It gave me wings. Thank you very much indeed, Jessica. But you were wonderful. Lovely to meet you, by the way.
No problem.
So, Jessica, I mean, the plan is now to move them from one set of tents to another set of tents. Mind you, there will be services, et cetera, et cetera. And the ultimate plan is to build housing of some description or structures of some description. I don't know what it is. Do you think this is it just moving the problem, or is it a better situation?
No, it's just moving the problem. And like I've said before, it's just throwing us behind again. It's leaving us behind again. What about the homeless that are freezing in town? They wouldn't trust the hostels that are in there, and I don't blame them because they don't bother to reform them either. They probably love something that had a bit more facilities, a bit more secure, but of course, these aren't paying us like NGOs, they're paying us to house these lots, so you're on your own. But, like, I honestly think, right, I mean, this is how much I actually hate who's in at the moment. The way I look at the government is the same way I look at Man City in the Premier League. You cannot get any more corrupt than that. It's absolutely baffling.
It's a good analogy, by the way, can I just point out?
No, but it's so baffling. You can tell that they're just clearly corrupt. Everyone can see it clear as day.
Morally corrupt.
Yeah, and nothing's getting done. There's no consequences. They could literally set fire.
But there is consequences, Jessica. The consequences are that people don't like them, and we're looking at what's happening in the campaigns out there.
We don't like them because they don't care that we don't like them, because the way they see it is, we're all covering each other's arses, so it's fine. We'll be grand. We'll live it out. But sure, look.
And do you think there's any politicians that actually care about you? Do you think there's any politicians care about you?
Probably like the very few good independents. Like there's that girl Michelle Smith, I think her name is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where she represents.
Yeah, she's in the Midwest.
But
yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
If I could, I'd give her a high role in the government tomorrow, because she actually speaks a bit of sense, speaks mm-hmm. some facts.
Yeah.
The rest of them, I wouldn't trust them with a goldfish. the way they're letting people in, though, it's ridiculous. Your passport is almost like an invitation to a party. If you don't have it, you're not getting in. End of. So I don't know why we can't take that approach.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There are very rare circumstances, and there can be. And somebody mentioned it today, and it is fair to say that where somebody may flee a war, and, you know, I don't know, literally their town has been bombed and they don't have time to go looking for a passport. I get that. That can happen. But that's not the case, by the way, in most of the people who are coming here.
That's the minority. The majority of them, like you said, are coming from Birmingham, Paris, all very safe cities.
No, they're tearing up their own passports. They're destroying their own passports.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Oh, I know. They're chancing their arm and they're getting away with it. It's baffling, to be honest. Mm. But then you have Simon Harris again, and he's only after pissing me off the other day. And, like I don't know if it was yourself or someone else said recently, as a road in our neutrality, when he's there calling out the president of Israel, I'm like, right, well, we're not really neutral if we're calling people out. Like, just leave us out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop dragging us.
I've looked up, because I had to, because I was doing a piece on RT today, but I did look up, and I looked up a bit of research on the different polls that have been done over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years in relation to our neutrality. And the vast majority of people want to keep our neutrality. We don't want to be involved in war. We've always been peacekeepers in this country, by the way. We don't want to be involved in war.
Like, don't get me wrong, like, what's going on over there in the Ukraine?
It's terrible.
It's horrible. Like, no one should be fighting anyone, like, but, like, don't be calling the president out on it, because then you make them mad, and it shows that you're taking sides. Like, it defeats the purpose of being neutral.
Well, you know, I mean, it's not going to make an ounce of difference. You know, Simon Harris saying something about Israel, or saying something about Palestine, or saying something about Ukraine or Russia, is not going to save one single life.
Oh, I know that, but I don't know. Like, he's just eroding the way of neutrality and just waving it away. Like, nah, sorry, that was back in the '40s or the '30s even. That doesn't count today. I'm going to call you out on it. But like I said, it kind of paints a target on our backs then. It makes us look bad. It's like he's speaking on behalf of us. It's like, well, we don't want to get involved, so we don't even speak about it.
No, we shouldn't be getting involved. And obviously, you know, my own policy is, by the way, we shouldn't be giving any money towards military or any military aid towards Ukraine or anywhere, indeed. We can give humanitarian aid. That's not a problem. But certainly we shouldn't be funding the military.
Don't be funding the soldiers. Like, no. Then that's immediately showing sides and defeats neutrality. They all need to go. They all need to get sacked.
Okay, listen, Jessica, thank you for that. Thank you very much for all your help as well and assistance over the last couple of weeks. Let me just go to Bernie as well. Bernie, hi, how are you?
I'm grand, Niall. How are you?
I'm tired, but I'm good.
Good lad. The old Red Bull will keep you going.
That's why I have it here. Yeah.
Okay, so my thought on this is the iPad centre is up the road, open it 24 hours a day, have the buses outside, bring them in. If they don't have the papers, put them back on the bus, out to the airport. Michael O'Leary will take them to wherever country they want to go back to, and they're gone. Not, how can we keep any more people? In the name of God, putting them from the side of a road to a bigger tent. Just deal with them 24 hours a day. Let's work for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And people on overtime do nights, days. I'm sure people from Newtown, Mount Kennedy, any county in the country at this stage would help with overtime and help to go through all the documentation with them and see if they are genuine or not, and put them back on the bus and out to the airport and away you go.
But here's the problem, okay? And this is what the government will tell you about your plan, right? And I agree with your plan, right? But here's the problem. Here's what they're going to say to you. So we do that. We bust them back out to Dublin Airport. We get a deal off Michael O'Leary at, you know, 30 quid a flight, whatever it is, right? He sends most of them back to the United Kingdom, because that's where they're coming from. Then they just get back on a bus, go back up to Scotland, back over to Northern Ireland, and back down again.
And this time they'll have stamps saying that they were not suitable for Ireland.
Mm. So at that stage, we fingerprinted them already, is the point you're making. So we already know who they are.
Yeah, and have more people in the, if they do try again at all the borders, have people to identify them. It's going to slow down our country, you know, getting in and out of the country, but I'd rather be held up now than being killed in the future because we don't know who we've let in.
Okay,
and
so...
And, like, us put the head above the palace, you know, with Palestine. Stop looking at other countries. Look at your own first. There's so much awful things going on here that need to be dealt with now, not waiting for every person who sent you a letter or something through the door for them owl yokes. Vote for this. They've all talked about it, but no one's stuck it up. Nobody has given us anything. It's all bits of paper. That's all it is.
But none of them are really talking about it. I mean, I listened to some of the politicians, by the way, particularly some of the European MEPs from around Ireland. And, you know, and I'm listening to some of them saying, you know, oh, well, immigration is not what I'm hearing at the front door. I said, what front doors are you going to?
Well, they're not going to my front door.
It is the number one issue. And the reason it's the number one issue is because it affects so many different things. It affects services in small towns when you move them into small towns. It affects the local GP service. It affects the health service. It affects education because there's less places in schools. It affects everything. Everything. All right, sorry, yeah, Bernie.
But Niall, at the bottom, the bottom line is they're not dealing with it. You can. We're talking about this for 3.5 years now. It's actually gone on longer.
But it's been going on for nearly 20 years, but since the last referendum.
It's longer. I can remember back to the 90s when the ambulances were going out to the airport to pick up women who were dropping babies at the airport.
That's right, and we changed that in 2004 with a referendum. So since 2004, the referendum, we've still been dealing with the problem, right? Now, when I say the problem, we haven't been strict on immigration, but in the last 3 years, it seems to have got out of control.
Now, we're not the only country. Unfortunately, I've listened to my friends in Australia and New Zealand. Everyone, every country is beginning to get it. And they're all dealing with this problem. And you have do-gooders in every country in the world saying, oh, you know, like criminal records, and they're putting them in jails and, you know, getting them on islands in Australia, some island in Australia.
That's right, yeah.
And the do-gooders are coming along then, you know, oh, please take them out. They'll be better when they come out. And they're being, the Australians are now being raped and pillaged. So why are we allowing that kind of, we've all struggled to keep ourselves and live by the law. And, you know, I wouldn't put a tent up. Would you put a tent up out of the boot of your car at night if you couldn't find a hotel? No, you wouldn't. You get back into your car and you go home. Like, why are we allowing this kind of thing? We're not allowed to do it. So
okay.
Why are they being allowed to do it?
Okay, thank you for that, Bernie. I appreciate it. And by the way, just because Bernie mentioned there as well, talking, I mean, if you watch the VMTV debate the other night, by the way, I wasn't invited onto it, even though I'm polling higher than most of the people that were actually on it. I wasn't allowed on it. Well, when I say wasn't allowed, I wasn't invited. And the same will go for the RTE debate as well, by the way, when that happens 3 or 4 days before the elections. I won't be invited onto that either, even though I'm polling at number 3 or 4, and there's people polling way down at 17 and 18, and they'll be on it. But I won't, because I'm not part of the establishment. Because that's what we do in this country. There's no democracy. The real democracy. So in other words, the criteria for getting onto the RTE debate, which we all know does get you a few votes, the criteria for that is an existing MEP. So they've failed miserably over the last 5 years. So why would we want them again? And then the next criteria is being a sitting TD, which I'm clearly not. After that, I might get a chat, but there's no point. I'm not going to get onto the show. And that's just the criteria, which is not democracy, by the way, because you'll never hear new voices, really. Anyway, let me just go to John, if I can. John, hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
John, can I just say a huge thank you to John, because if you're up at Dominic Street Flats, you will look up at the top floor and you will see this massive big banner that says, Vote Niall Boylan, number one. And John put that up, hanging from the top of his apartments. Up in the
took
flats.
It took me an effort. Fair play to Sarah for dropping it up.
Yeah, Sarah dropped it up to you. We got it printed off. Sarah dropped it up to you, and it's hanging there, and it looks beautiful, John. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah,
the Niall Boylan podcast mug. It's winging its way to you as we speak.
No worries. And at the back of my house, at the back of my apartment, is the Sinn Féin office. So every time Mary Lou drives out, if you want to send me up a poster, put your mug there. Your poster there, and every time that they're coming out, they see your mush, and they will cry. And as soon as you get elected, they won't be calling you Niall Boylan. They'll be calling you Boiled Niall.
Boiled Niall. Very good, John. John, you're angry, are you?
A little bit. I have a few things written down here.
Okay, go for it. Go on.
Okay. Okay, you have my uncle there now, the sofa with me, not going to mention his name, but he's earning 40 grand gross, and he's in a government job, and he can't get on the corporation list. And
because he's over the threshold,
just by 1,000 quid.
Yeah.
And just by that, but where he works, he has immigrants and all coming into him, and, you know, talking, and they're going for English classes. They have to do English classes, whatever.
Yeah.
And but yeah, and then like, I live in, as I said, as you said, Dominic Street, and I live beside a lovely family, a lovely Ukrainian family, great, great people, love them, and a Muslim family,
yeah,
great people, doctor, and a nurse, and we do have chat and all that, but it's like a Jenga piece, isn't it? The Jenga, I call it the Jenga process.
Yeah.
Right? The citizens of Ireland fit everything up, and it only takes one gobshite like Helen McEntee to rip it down, and everything falls to pieces.
Yeah, I was talking, and you know what? Even, you know, people who have been here, you know, from other lands who've been here many years. I was talking to a chap the other day. He was from Nigeria and he came here 20 years ago and his family here and everything else, right? And he came through the proper process, et cetera, right? And he was even saying to me, you know, we can't continue doing this. He said, because he wants to see a good Ireland as well. You know what I mean? Even though he himself is an immigrant. And, you know, immigrants are important to our country, provided they go through a proper process.
Oh, no, absolutely, absolutely. I was up in the Mata Hospital there, it was last year, and the best of nurses, best of doctors, and the best of welcomes. I was treated like a king up in the hospital. But nobody in Ireland has a problem with that. Nobody has a problem with
that. The government seems to, what they're trying to do is anybody who they believe is anti-immigrant or anti-them when it comes to immigration policy, they're trying to make out that, you know, the girl or the guy that works as a doctor or a nurse in a hospital is the same as the lad that's just come over the border with no identification. They're not the same. It's not the same.
No. Yeah, that's the, but A.N. O'Reardon and all.
Yeah. They'll tell you that, yeah.
Yeah. But it's two different topics completely.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying is, I think an Irish, border down the Irish Sea is the only way you can do it. Obviously, and I can't do it up the north, Nori, but yeah.
Well, some people are saying that maybe you could put a, I know we don't want to see that, put a border up temporarily. Nothing permanent, obviously, because we don't want to go back to those dark days. John, unfortunately, I have to get to a lot of calls, and I hope I hope certainly that he gets somewhere to live, because, and I've always said in relation to the HAP scheme and the way it works and the threshold works is it shouldn't be a cut-off threshold. Like, if I think the threshold is 35,000 or something like that, right? But it shouldn't be a cut-off threshold. When you go over it, basically the allowance that you get should go down. But it shouldn't just be cut off. In other words, once you earn over that money, you can't apply for it. That's not the way means testing should ever work. In other words, if you're earning 40 grand, you should still get money. Oh, I know that, yeah. You should still get something towards your housing, even if you're earning 40 grand, because there's no way on 40,000 you could afford to live anywhere in Dublin. Certainly not nowadays. Not at whatever it is, 2,300 for a house nowadays. Listen, John, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate it. Sorry, Maureen's been waiting ages. I do apologise, Maureen. I'm so sorry.
You're all right, Niall.
Maureen, you know, we're really at the final stage of this, aren't we? I mean, it just can't get much worse, can it?
No, and it won't get much better either.
Well, the government are pretending that they're pretending to make it better because there's an election coming up, of course.
The government are lackeys for the EU. Do you remember the Irish referendum on the treaty establishing a constitution for Europe?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Remember they signed that in October, the 29th of October 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But the French rejected it. But they actually, then it fell by the wayside here because they would have had to have a referendum for an amendment to Article 29 of the constitution. EU law now supersedes our Irish law, and it supersedes our one constitution. The other member states transferred certain powers to the EU, they limited their sovereign rights. So our sovereign rights are limited. The World Health Organization treaty is coming up on the 27th of May. If we're signed up to that, if all that passes, total sovereignty is gone.
Well, when it comes to preparation for a pandemic, for example, absolutely. And by the way, I wouldn't agree with that, by the way.
But it has nothing to do with pandemic.
No, I'm just talking about the WHO treaty. I don't agree with it.
But going back to that, the state, and it then said, and thus in order for EU norms to be effective, they must take precedence over any provision of national law, including constitutions. These lackeys, there is nothing they can do to stop them coming in because this is a European directive. if they do anything that goes one iota against what the EU Parliament want, they will face a fine. This is all written down.
But you've just seen, by the way, that in the Netherlands, you know, they've now said that they're restricting asylum. They're going to reduce the amount of climate change policies that they have. They're basically throwing everything in the bin. And they've said to the EU, basically, like it or lump it.
Well, good for them.
But here's the thing, the EU are not going to kick us out. Because the EU need us as much as we need them.
No, we don't know. I'm for leaving the EU now.
Okay,
we don't need the EU. We never needed the EU.
Well, what we need... Yeah, but hold on, Maureen. What we need is a European Union that works for us. Not the other way around. We shouldn't be working for them. They should be working to help us. Other way around.
But then... Yes, but that's not ever going to happen.
But see, don't have a defeatist attitude, because what we need is that we need a different EU. We don't need the EU we have right now.
But it's not a defeatist attitude. It's coming from the point of we knew what was happening 10, 15 years ago. This has all been planned.
But if you go back to the EEC, right, if you go back to the EEC, I do apologise, the Red Bull is going against me, breath. If you go back to the EEC, that was a pretty good idea. The whole idea was that European countries, financially and otherwise, would work together to help each other. That was the whole idea of the European Union then when that was founded as well, right? Or the EU, as we now know.
I know exactly what the EEC was about.
Okay, and we have had, overall, we've had a bit of a net gain overall. But we have lost a lot of our sovereignty. You are right. We've lost control of a lot of laws. You are absolutely 100% right. But we can't afford to lose any more. And I can tell you I can tell you now, Maureen, if there was a referendum in the morning to leave the EU, it won't pass. So what we have to do is accept that we're in the EU at the moment. That could change in 5 years and there might be a different appetite and atmosphere out there. But for this moment in time, we have to accept we're in the EU and we have to have the right people to make the right decisions. Not just from Ireland,
right,
by the way.
Yeah.
From other countries around Europe.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Except we're in the EU. But the next government that gets into power here, because we're not even operating under Irish law, even in our court system. This is European law. And until the next government comes in and says, we get a government in there that has the balls to say, like Denmark, up yours to the EU, we are going back to our own constitution, our own laws, we have our borders, we say who comes in and who doesn't come in. Simple as.
I've spoken to barristers in relation to this already, and many of them believe that we can do that anyway. We just don't have the balls to do it.
Exactly. That's the whole crux of it. That's why we need total complete...
I mean, look at Poland are doing it.
In Dalairn.
Hungary are doing it. The Netherlands are doing it.
Good for them. Yeah, good for them. We need an overhaul. We need completely new blood in Dalairn.
Well, we need Ursula von der Leyen. We need Ursula von der Leyen out the door. She needs to go.
Yeah. But let's start with our own country first. We need to get our own house in order. Where we go back to our own laws, our own decisions, who comes and who doesn't come. And we operate under our own laws, and we have to as well get at the judicial system and get the rot out of it, because it's rotten from the top to the bottom. We all know that.
Okay, Maureen, thank you for that. I'm sorry I'm rushing through people. There's just so many people. Thank you, and sorry for keeping you waiting so long, Maureen. Owen, hi, how are you?
Hello, Noel.
Nice to talk to you, Owen. Now, Owen, you live... is it okay to tell people where you live?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yes.
Okay, you live around Mount Street. Which I'm sure is not a very nice place to be living at the moment.
Well, I've been there 60 years, so, I mean, this is just now. Can I just correct you slightly, Niall, when you said there a few seconds ago that it couldn't get much worse?
Mm.
We're only at the start of this. I mean, there's probably around 25,000 in the last 2 to 3 years that have come in. There's going to be on at least 20,000 per year, probably
30,000
over the next 5-6 years each year. 30,000.
Well, you're saying 5 or 6 years. I believe it could be inevitable that could go on a lot longer. They're predicting 6 million into Europe per year. Yeah.
Oh no, I'm just saying. I'm not trying to be dramatic. I'm just saying over the like. So
no, you're not.
Like
no, you're not being dramatic. You're being realistic. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. So, and then there's the issue, I have some experience with some foreigners and they're all vetted, they're all working and everything else, I have no problem with them, but A, they don't integrate at all. I mean, I just know that. I mean, I try and get them sort of to integrate a little bit.
Some people do integrate and assimilate.
Most don't. Mm. Trust me. I mean, I could name, I won't, 10 people I've known over the last 20 years. And they all stay in their own boxes. They associate with their own.
I could argue, Owen, that if you go to the United States, for example, and go to Chicago or go to Brooklyn or go to or Boston, should say, or New York, you will see there's Irish communities. You know, and they tend to stick together. You know what I mean?
No, that's my point.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, like, can I give you just an interesting story? You're old enough to remember the double parking. You know, before campers, you used to have to double park on a road, you know.
Yeah.
So we've been discussing around here, like, when you hear the left-wing TDs and Fianna Gael TDs and Fianna Fáil TDs from this area saying that the locals are welcoming these people, it's all garbage. It's only the blow-ins, the middle-class blow-ins, that are welcoming them. I mean, so when I noticed they were starting to double park the tents on Mount Street and Grattan Street, like literally double park them.
Yeah.
So you couldn't, there was no space left on the footpath to walk. So effectively, the tents were nearly in the bus lane and the pedestrians had to walk in the bus lane. Okay. So it was Good Friday. I contacted a Pierce Street Garda station, spoke to a guy who was relatively okay at the beginning. And I sort of said, listen, can you get the a squad car down here to stop the start of the double parking?
Yeah.
So I saw the first double park tent gone in, and I just happened to be passing by. I do a bit of community work in the area, and I stopped the car, got out. I said to this guy, didn't have a word of English. I said, sorry, you can't park there. Just go around the corner.
Yeah.
Just go around where the lane was. There was a little
lane. I know the lane. Yeah.
And it took me about 10 minutes to get him to relent and to move us. So I then phoned, I tried to go into Pierce Street Garda Station, but there's no parking anymore. It's all double yellow lines and cul-de-sacs and everything else.
Yeah.
So I decided to come back. It took me about half an hour to get nowhere. Came back, parked up, drove, spoke to the policeman in Pierce Street Garda Station. I sort of said, can you get someone along here? He appeared to know what I'm saying. And he put me onto the dispatch. I gave the details. So I just presumed there was a Garda's car going to come down. So this is after a year of these tents at this point, a year and a half. Good Friday, just last.
Yeah.
So next morning, there was 6 tents there, all double parked. The next day, there was 15, right? So very aggressive, the policeman a second. So he just happened to be the same guy on call the second day. And so a couple of weeks later, this is the point I'm trying to make here. A couple of weeks later, again, just doing my community tour around the place to see, you know, if I can pick up any litter or whatever. And a Garda van turned up, just coincidentally. 4 cops got out of the van. And I approached them. I said, would you mind if I spoke to you? And they said, no problem. I said, are you here to move the tents? All along Mount Street. And one of them said, yeah. And the reason it later turned out that they turned up was that the one tent that I had noticed, which was a new tent, it was outside Fianna Fáil's headquarters on Mount Street.
Oh, right.
Now, it gets better.
So in other words, something gets done if you piss off a politician. Yeah, go on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So next day, I had hoped that all the tents along Mount Street were going to be gone. None. The only tent that was gone was the one outside Fianna Fáil headquarters. So now, this is the second point I'm trying to make. So that went on for a few more weeks. Then they started coming over to the other side of Mount Street because all the double parking was gone for the tents. I call it tents on tour.
Yeah.
Okay. So they've now moved over to the other side. And guess who's on the other side of Lower Mount Street?
Sinn Féin office?
No. The European Commission.
Oh, I was just guessing. Sorry when you said guess. I just assumed it was another politician. Okay, go on. So,
hey, presto.
They were moved again.
Within a week, Harris has come in. You ain't seen nothing yet, Harris. Okay? He's come in. The tents are outside the European Commission. All their steps and everything else, and all of a sudden they're moved. So the two modes of action were because obviously a Fianna Fáil politician had complained. Now, in all fairness, I have to be very laudatory of Jim O'Callaghan. He has put his head above the parapet and called for something to be done. And it was done. But we're now, you've obviously seen the barricades down.
Yeah, I mean, look, to be honest with you, it's equally as bad to have barricades all down the road. I mean, that's ridiculous. here's the thing. I'm wondering about the barricades, right? And there's barricades all along the canal now as well. And up further, as you know, the tents are there. There's over 100 tents again. So, but here's the problem. If they're saying that it's going to be 500 or 600 people a week, and this is there's no end to this, right? They talk about 30,000 a year. How long are they going to leave those barricades there for? Forever?
That's my point. You see, the media haven't investigated this. What's happening now is there's a sudden rush to get these six sites that Catherine Day apparently proposed a couple of years ago. So there's a big rush to get them. They will accommodate maybe a year's worth of these illegal immigrants. They will accommodate a year. So you'll get about 2 years of a respite. And then all of a sudden, once all those accommodation centres that are going to be built now, once they're full up, the chance of starts appearing.
Okay, so I think we're at a point now where firstly the IPASS building needs to be closed down in Mount Street, right? Because that's going to deter them from being there. But what they need to do is put an IPASS centre in each of those centres. And process people in 72 hours.
Of course. No, actually, my proposal is to actually reposition the major IPASS centre up near Dundalk or Drogheda. Because as you probably discussed on your programme,
80% are coming from the United Kingdom, yeah.
Yes, no, but more importantly, the Belfast High Court has recently decreed that
Rwanda's not a safe country. Yes, yeah, so
exactly. Yeah. So we can deport them back to Northern Ireland. So in other words, once they come
I'm getting you, right? But how do you deal with that situation? So we deport people back to Northern Ireland, right, which is essentially part of the same country. All they do is get back on a bus again and come back down again.
No, but
they just do it illegally this time, and they don't present themselves.
Yeah, no, there has to be patrols. There has to be maybe 300 or 400.
I worry about that.
I doubt it as well. No, I doubt it as well. But like at this point, I have never seen so much anger. I mean, from middle class people, I'm not talking about.
No, I know everybody. A mate of mine said to me today, he's voting for me. This is what he said. I'm voting for you. Yeah. And he said, you never guess, me six lefty mates are voting for you as well, because they're pissed off too. And I said, I don't think I've ever had a lefty voting for me, but there you go. No, I get you. Sorry, I'm running out of time rapidly, Owen. But I do empathise with your situation, by the way, there in Mount Street, because now it's not tents you're putting up, but it's barriers you have to walk around, right? And I hope...
Tents on tour.
Yeah, all right. Listen, Owen, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on. Good luck to you. Let me go to... Oh, yeah, Karen is next. Karen, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
I'm good, Karen.
Tired, I'd say.
I mean, look, I don't mind. I'm up at 6:30 every morning and I'm finishing at 11 or 12 o'clock every night. That's why I had to move the podcast today, because I'm trying to fit the podcast in around it as well, because it's important to me. So all these things are important to me, you know. So I'm trying to fit in. We will, there's no doubt, by the way, can I warn everybody, I will probably miss one or two podcasts between now and the next 2.5 weeks, because obviously we're getting a lot busier as we get closer to the day of voting. So I do apologise for that in advance, but what we do is we'll put out a repeat or something else. But when I do get elected, and I'm going to say when, Karen, not if, when I do get elected, I promise we're going to reschedule the podcast to make sure we stay in touch constantly all the time.
Brilliant.
Karen,
getting back to your question.
Get back to my question.
Depends, moving them, absolutely not, because you're going to incentivise the problem even more. And they become nothing only jungles, like the Calais jungle back there 20 to about 10 years ago in France. That's all that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe, Bernie, one of the girls that was on earlier on there a little while ago, I'd be with Bernie as well. And first of all, it shouldn't be let off the plane. If you don't have documentation, you should not be let off the plane. I mean, if the airline then, you know, say, well, we can't do that, well, then you fine the airlines.
I agree with you. But here's the thing, Karen.
Are they getting on the... Go ahead.
I agree with you, but the problem is the vast majority who are coming into the country are not coming into Dublin Airport. They're coming into Northern Ireland. We know that.
Yeah, and I know that last gentleman just listened there as well. I mean, do I want patrols? Do you want to see that? Look, temporarily as a temporary measure, I would be open to that. I would, absolutely. Mm. And I don't believe, like, I hate the idea of having those patrols, but I think then fingerprinted as well, like Bernie said, fingerprint them as well, and, you know, deport them, get them gone. Don't let them near the place. And if we start taking them out of the current, the canals, and then we build bigger centres for them, all they're going to do is incentivise them, and the NGO racket then will be all be on board. They'll be tutoring them what to say, what to do, and the problem is only going to get worse and worse all the time.
I wouldn't know. Here's the thing. I wouldn't be letting the NGOs near them. And if it was
but who's giving them the tents? Look at all.
I'm talking about it. If we're going for the Thornton Hall plan, right? Personally speaking, I would say that, you know, people should not be allowed out. They should be detained. Because if you've arrived in a country with no passport, no identification, you should be detained until we establish who you are and if you're genuine. So we should be establishing that. So, and that should be done in 72 hours, right? So in the interim, you should be detained because you're breaking the law.
I would support that measure. Mm. But then you got to be careful. You see what happens is then if the NGOs get at them and then their lawyers...
I couldn't give a shit about the NGOs.
Well-funded.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you see, they'll get involved and they'll start defending them. And then you have lawyers involved then. And before you know it then, you know, you have deportation orders that be rejected. And I do agree what you're saying, but I think 72 hours, they should be gone. That's it. If you don't meet the criteria, out you go. That's it.
Yeah, and to reiterate, there are some people who are genuine, and I get that. I understand that. But the vast majority are not.
Migrants. They don't meet any metric, any status whatsoever.
No, they're not
refugees. They're not economic migrants. They're just scammers. That's all they are. Because our Minister for Children, unfortunately, declared the world in multiple languages, all welcome, come here. And our benefits are so generous. They're getting free property. They're getting property, accommodation, all the subsidies, everything for nothing.
When you hear Karen, the government at the moment, saying, oh, well, look, we're reducing the money for Ukrainians to make it less attractive. You know, we're reducing money here, there and everywhere to make it less attractive. We're going to build these centres to make it less attractive. Do you trust the government to do the right thing?
Not at all. This is just all election promises now, just tempered, because the no immigration is that everywhere I go, every single where I go, people are not even political. All I keep hearing is immigration. And they're looking at social media, they're looking at towns up and down the countries, they're looking at protests everywhere, and they're seeing exactly what's happening. And everybody's saying, nobody, I don't want that in my area. Look at Newtown Mount Kennedy, I saw a video there, or an image earlier on of, what you call it, a syringe. A small rural village, and this is now what they're subjected to. I saw another one, Newtown on Kennedy as well, a video over the weekend where you had three women inside working, and you had two...
Oh, I lost you. Are you there?
Got smart, they came back again.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And they got smart with them, and all of a sudden they rang the Gardaí. 2 hours later, the Gardaí hadn't even arrived. But by God, there was no problem with the Gardaí. They were there in multiple numbers there 2 weeks ago, with batons and everything else. But all of a sudden now you've got vulnerable women looking for them, and they're nowhere to be found. So I think, look... It's a big issue everywhere else, and all it is just campaign promises. That's all it is.
All right, Karen. Listen, Karen, I'm stuck for time, but thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on, and thank you very much indeed. All right, let me just go to Joseph. Joseph, hi, how are you?
I know. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead, Joseph. What do you want to say?
Well, I think it's pretty much been said at this point. I mean, everyone who's been on said the same thing. That it's not.
Are we all
joke.
Really bad people? Because that's what the government will say. We're all really bad people.
No, there's nothing bad about defending your country. And I mean, that's what literally it is. It is defending our country. You can't let, you know, unknown numbers of foreigners in because you don't know who they are. You don't know what they're doing here. And, you know, if 90% of them or however many, again, an unknown number, don't work but are able to claim benefits, then they're sucking our country dry. I'm sorry to, you know, be cruel about it, but you can't be, you know, we all live in rainbow land and everyone gets the prize. You know, some people have to work to provide for the rest of us. For those of us who can't work, you know, unfortunately, try your best, do other things, whatever. But it can't sustain unlimited migration.
Well, why do you think, and I've asked this question a million times, but I can never, ever even get an answer. And I've talked to so many politicians over the last 3 weeks, obviously because of what I'm doing, and I still can't get a straight answer. Why do you think the government, including Rodrigo Gorman, Helen McEntee, Micheál Martin, Simon Harris, the whole lot of them, why do you think they're doing something that's so unpopular that they're probably going to lose their jobs in the next election? Why do you think they would do something so unpopular? There must be some sort of reason behind it.
Yeah, of course there is. That they're not telling us, and that's what's kind of worrying. And you know, we can make assumptions, but I don't know will we ever actually guess.
Do you think that? I mean, I know this sounds like a crazy conspiracy theory, but do you think they're worried about the future of Ireland and the population decline?
No, no. If they were worried about population decline, you can't just replace one Irish person with one foreigner and say we've solved population decline. That's not the issue. And if they wanted to, if they were really worried, would they not be doing stuff to increase the Irish birth rate, which is on the floor? I mean, it's...
Of course, support the family. Yeah, I keep saying that, support the family.
Yeah, support the family. If you gave young couples a job for a house, for a job, for, you know, good future prospects, they'd all be having babies. I mean, they would. A lot of them want to have kids, but they're not. Again, you know, with the abortion thing came through, we're losing out 10,000 people every year to that. No, they're not really so concerned about population collapse. What they're doing is they're destroying the communities of people. If you have a community that's all homogenous, all, you know, Irish people, we're in a great community, we get along, we work together. If you scatter that with, outsiders who don't integrate, you break up the foundation of that community. People don't do community things. No one attends. You know, there's disregard for the history, culture, the area. All those things die. That's what they're doing. They're weakening the population altogether so that, you know, it's easier to control. That's what I think.
Okay, well, I there has to be some motive behind the madness because, I mean, you know, as a politician, the last thing you want is to be unpopular, particularly if you're getting close to an election. You don't want to be unpopular because you want your job back. Or maybe they don't. Maybe they're happy enough to take the pension and go. Actually, Joseph, just stay there just for a second because I want to go to Ibrahim as well. Ibrahim, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How's it going?
I'm good, Ibrahim. Ibrahim, you know, I suppose, you know, when we look at this situation, I would find it difficult to get a caller on the air in the whole of Ireland at this moment in time who has a logical brain to think that there's something right about what's going on.
And you'd be right with that. Definitely it's something wrong. Many of your callers have mentioned different aspects, and I would be in agreement on most of them, I think. A lot of ways to address the situation. Like you were saying, people coming in from... mostly from the border, 80%. There is a way to stop that, either by having some kind of a border control for anybody not carrying a proper English, UK, basically Northern Ireland or Irish ID, would be stopped at the border and returned to the north. And any buses that are coming down would have to have, like airports, basically, would have to check for identifications if anybody gets...
And you see, Ibrahim, that's the logical thing to do, right? Okay, but here's what worries me greatly. We worked so hard in this country to have no border, to be able to travel freely between Northern Ireland and Ireland. We fought tooth and nail during Brexit to get rid of what they call the backstop, which was, that's what they were, the hard border, right? We fought tooth and nail to do for that. We can't have our cake and eat it. And essentially now what we're saying is, we need to put a border back because we've got a crisis going on here. And by the way, I'm okay with that. I'll deal with that. But there are people in Northern Ireland, particularly, I suppose, nationalists in Northern Ireland, who wouldn't be okay with that.
Yeah, but there's not going to be any problem for anybody coming in from Northern Ireland. It's only going to be with somebody who's not carrying...
Oh, no, I know that. But the very idea of the memory of having a checkpoint, I don't know, Ibrahim, if you remember the checkpoints that were there before, but that idea, it just brings back so many memories for people.
Yeah, I understand, but, you know, it's an ongoing fight. So, you
well,
know,
then why not work together with Northern Ireland? And I think it would be simpler, although the loyalists might not be too happy, but that, you know, remember, we're surrounded by water, unless they're going to swim across the ocean, that we're surrounded by water. So they have to come in at either Larne, Belfast or George Best Airport. Okay, there's only three or four places they can come in, or some of the local ferries. So all we do, why not, you know, do work with Northern Ireland and the First Minister of Northern Ireland and work with them, you know, to stop people at the point of entry rather than having to put that hard border in Northern Ireland.
But that would be a logical way to go. But I mean, how compliant are they going to? Will the North be more supportive of Ireland or of the UK, where they're owned basically by the UK and they're funding, the government there is funded by the UK. They're not really benefiting anything from us. They're getting rid of people actually who would be a burden on their economy and pushing them down here. But, you know, also apart from this, I do feel there is something, you know, potentially more nefarious with this situation. If you see most of the migrants, they're kind of like young males, young to middle-aged males.
Yep.
You don't see women, you don't see children. These are the people you're supposed to be protecting in war or in any kind of a conflict. The males should be there fighting for their country. But we're not seeing that here. And I think that based on the upcoming announcements of pandemics or the migration pact or
the WHO treaty.
These are all situations where effectively, if we're bound by Europe, these people could be called up to serve in return for getting immigration status that would be localized, so they'd get their citizenships for serving.
You're talking about an EU army, essentially.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that, by the way. If anyone wants to know my feeling on that, by the way, because obviously I'm running for election, I don't agree with an EU-wide army. And I don't ever agree with Ireland having anything to do with war, by the way, in any shape or form.
Yep. And we've discussed this before, you and myself, on the previous shows, that I'm for Ireland withdrawing from the EU totally, to be honest. There's zero benefit for us being part of the EU. So,
I would be bonkers to suggest, by the way, that there's zero benefit. I get what you're saying. I don't believe there's an appetite right now to leave Europe, because the most recent polls show that the majority of people want to stay in the European Union. Maybe in 5 years that could change, Ibrahim. But I do believe, when we look across Ireland over the last 30 years, I do believe we've gained something from Europe. But what I'm seeing in the last 4 or 5 years is a net loss. And I'm not going to disagree with you. But I've said this already. That doesn't mean we should just abandon ship. I do believe that it can work well if it has the right people in it. You've got to remember, what's been the ministers or the parliamentarians that have been in Europe, or the commission that's been in Europe for the last 5 years, are a bunch of lefties. Now, so, you know, it's not going to get any better until it changes. And I think it's going to see a huge change this year. I'm not just saying it because I'm running, but I believe across Europe, when I see some of the MEPs that are running at the moment, I think you're going to see a big change.
I'm hoping for that. I'm on board with what you're saying, but it's. I feel that it's being drastically accelerated in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like, you know, just everything is, they're letting go of everything. It's just like now recently in Ukraine, they said they're going to call off elections until there's no war. So what if something like that happened here? How would the people react to this?
Yeah.
If there's now suddenly a pandemic outbreak of bird flu, and the government calls off any elections, and they say, okay, we're going to keep the status quo until any pandemic is clear. They signed the pandemic treaty. Now we're no longer a sovereign nation.
Pandemic treaty, by the way, and I will encourage everybody to be against it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole point of me going to Europe and MEPs going to Europe from any country in the world, by the way, is to represent their country and to make sure that you don't lose your sovereignty as much as possible, as much as humanly possible. I mean, obviously, there are directives coming from Europe in relation to different things. Some of them are quite good, by the way. Some of the more recent ones are, for example, you know, free roaming on your phone. They're great directives, right? You know, across Europe. Up to that point, we had to pay ridiculous bills when we went on holidays to Spain. So some of the stuff that it does come out of Europe is quite good. But there's a lot of it is not good, and it takes away our sovereignty, and it takes away control over our own laws, and that needs to stop. We've already lost enough control. We don't need to lose any more.
Yeah, but with the current government, I think the push is that way. I mean, you can see that they're pointed in this direction. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. The compass is pointed, EU, and that's it. You know, part of a global union, and with other people running the show. So they don't care about the Irish. When I first came to Ireland, I think there was maybe 2,000 homeless people, and now the numbers are ridiculous. I thought, you know, within a few years that number would be wiped out.
But where did you originally come from? I've forgotten. Sorry.
I moved to Ireland in 2014. The first time I came to Ireland was in 2003, but I moved permanently in 2014.
From where?
Well, I'm originally from Yemen.
Okay.
But I grew up in the UK, and I've worked around the world, basically.
Can I ask you a quick question? And I don't mean to insult you by saying this. So what do you say to people who will say to you, well, God, you know, you availed of it, Ibrahim, the possibility of coming to Ireland and working and having a better life. So why wouldn't you want other people to give a better life? I'm not going to ask you that, but people will ask you that.
Well, I did it legally. I mean, I had a visa when I came in, a legal visa. My daughter is an Irish citizen, and I went through the process legally to become part of this community. So I don't mind anybody doing it. I'm pro legal immigration, because I feel it improves the status of the country and it elevates the,
yes,
the people themselves.
People with skills, of course, as well, apart from anything, yeah, else. Yeah. Okay, well, actually, we'll stay there for a second, because I need to go to have two more callers to go to here, too. If you want to stay there, Ibrahim, you can. Let me go to Tara. Okay. Tara, yeah. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're so welcome, Tara.
I completely agree with a lot of the various points made by Joseph and Ibrahim, so I'm not going to repeat those points. But I think that if we can't hold a referendum on the matter, I honestly God think that those individuals who vocally support our ridiculous immigration system, the like far left, who seem to think that the world is obligated to be an echo chamber for whatever bandwagon they're jumping on, the sort who call those of us with common sense racist, they and the public should be given the option to sign up to house these immigrants at their own expense. No freebies, no grants, nothing. And you'd see how quickly they'd back down. Now, ideally, I would love to move the immigrants to Roderick Street and let him deal with the mess he created. But obviously that's not a realistic option. So as far as I'm concerned, the only viable solution is to now bring in the army, have them round up these guests and start deportations. Because realistically, Niall, it doesn't matter if they're by the canal or in a field. They're still in Ireland and we're still paying for that. And the consequences of this uncontrolled immigration system will be the rock that we, the taxpayers, will eventually perish on. There can't but be serious consequences in every sector for this level of uncontrolled immigration. And anything that's uncontrolled is always going to lead to mass chaos. And
what do you say to politicians? What do you say to politicians that I've been talking to over the last 3 weeks while I'm running for election? They're telling me, and this is just some politicians from Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, or whatever it is. We're not hearing that on the doors, immigration. So are they delusional?
Even if the immigrants were vetted, right? Even if they were vetted, it still doesn't take away from the fact that they're still coming from cultures that are wildly incompatible with that of the general West. They're coming from cultures who famously despise
But do you believe people can assimilate? Now, I'm talking about people who come through legitimate sort, I mean, who would have a visa, whatever. I mean, do you believe, of course, that when somebody comes here legitimately, with their work, can they assimilate? But they can assimilate, can't they?
They want to, if they're willing to, they can. But there's others, that it would be naive to think they all want to. A lot of them come here with the intention to do anything but integrate with us.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them hate the West. And there's many safe countries where these people will be more culturally and religiously compatible. But one of the reasons they're obviously coming to Ireland is because they know it's being run by fools, and they'll give them everything without question and protect them if they commit a crime of any nature. I said it in my text. Simon, Helen and Roderick, that's turning the country into a hostel and an international joke, and they need to be stopped. And McEntee has come out, even Simon himself, they've come out with ridiculous statistics on immigration. And it was data they had clearly fabricated. I asked both of them several times to cite their sources and they couldn't do it. Why are they making up these stats? Why are they making up data if they're doing everything right? McEntee even blocked me. And funny enough, it's never those who are doing things the right way that will try and quieten people.
She couldn't even give the statistics in the Oireachtas to Michael McNamara when he asked her.
Exactly.
Yeah, she can't. She doesn't know them for some reason. I have no idea why.
Exactly. It's not.
Imagine actually saying to a CEO company or the CEO of a company, for example, what was your turnover last year and your net loss and net profit? And he kind of goes, oh, I don't know. He'd be out of a job. Sorry, Ibrahim, go ahead.
Yeah, it's they know the numbers. They just lie to your faces because now it's become a norm. If you notice everywhere around, the politicians are just lying blatantly. There's no other way. I mean, this is it. There's nothing else to say about it. They know everything. It's a plan that they're going by. And they're going to lie to the public as much as they can and tell you what you want to hear. Everything is going to be fine and dandy. And then they're going to slap you and do what they want in their plan. And it's a loss for the country here and send it to hell.
Okay, well, I have to just go to Ed before I finish. Thank you for that, Tara, and I appreciate you coming on. Let me go to Ed as well. Ed, hi, how are you?
Hello.
Hello, Ed. Go ahead, Ed. Go on. What do you want to say?
I think there should be a few different systems. Like, if they have ID, for example, there should be something like a system where they're put near a barracks or something like that. If they don't have ID, well, then there should be detention centres.
So, in other words, there should be a restriction on movement if there's no identification, but if they have identification, there should be allowed some free movement while they're being processed, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and the payment system should change as well. There's something that has to happen now in Germany where there's a new payment system where they're given a card and they're given a certain amount every week while they're being processed, but that certain amount they're given can only be spent within the jurisdiction they're in, and that's what should happen.
So that's not actually a bad idea, actually, yeah.
And it is working. It's made an awful lot of move who are failing the system.
Yeah,
you know.
Mind you, Germany was quite welcoming of migrants going back a few years ago, of course, because they had their own population problems.
They do, and they still do, but like it's kind of like what's happening over in the US. They're all picking it's asylum tourism, really, rather than claiming asylum, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the tourism part of it needs to stop, and that's where the new systems need to be directed more strict. And the other thing as well about all the ones that are told to deport but didn't deport, that's going to fuel the black market. So that's another major issue, is the black market being fueled by the ones that are still there who didn't deport themselves.
And by the way, when they talk about the you know, I know the minister mentioned, Minister McGrath, Michael McGrath, said up to 30,000 this year. I think that's a conservative estimate, personally. But anyway, they're only the ones who present themselves at IPASS. You've got to remember, there are thousands of people coming into this country every single year who don't present at IPASS, who end up working, you know, in the back of a restaurant somewhere, the black economy, who are not being recognised. In other words, they're undocumented across the country and nobody even knows where they are. So we seem to have lost control completely, Ed, when it comes to immigration.
I think the multiculturalism thing as well has gone a bit out of control. Like, people seem to forget, multiculturalism is a great thing to have diversity and all that, but it involves integration. And integration and multiculturalism need to go hand in hand. That's not happening.
I always say, when we talk about multiculturalism, there's also a thing called multiclassism. And, you know, when you have, you know, different cultures coming into a country, but all of the same class. In other words, people who have skills, people who are working in tech companies, whatever it happens to be, that all works fine and dandy, and it usually works okay. But when you have people coming in who are unskilled and forever in their life will probably work in an unskilled job and have to be subsidised, that's when you start to have problems, or they'll be unemployed. That's when you have problems.
Well, it's like, I'll give you an example of Ukrainians. They've came in, but some of them have integrated, but a lot of them haven't. They're integrating with each other, still speaking their own languages, but they should be integrating into the community as well. And that needs to, that's probably why the you know, they have to learn English and all that in schools, and maybe over time it will work, but there definitely needs to be more work into integrating.
All right, listen, Ed, thank you very much indeed for that. Thank you to everybody who got involved in the show today. I really appreciate it. Don't forget, by the way, I am running for election. You have your opportunity on June the 7th to vote for me. I'm running in the Dublin constituency as a European MEP, so please do vote for me. I've made lots of promises, and I promise I will keep all those promises. Because as we know already, the MEPs that have been over there for the last 5 years, they disappear, they vanish, and you never see them again. It's like a game of hide-and-go-seek. Unfortunately, people have asked me, by the way, Niall, are you going to be on the RTE debate? No, I wasn't invited. I will be on RTE Drive Time on Wednesday evening at 5 o'clock. But I haven't been invited onto the main debate because I don't fit the criteria, it seems, even though I'm polling higher than most people who will actually be on it, which is quite bizarre. But that's just RTE and the way the criteria works. I will be obviously putting in a complaint to RTE because I think it's undemocratic. It doesn't give the opportunity for new voices. Those who get first dibs at the debate on RTE are the people who have already had the job of the European MEP, and clearly people don't want them again. Well, maybe some people do, I don't know. Anyway, I would like you to give me your vote. Don't forget, by the way, support the campaign. You can go to our website, nileboylanforeurope.ie. That's nileboylanforeurope.ie. And I would really appreciate if you go to the website, if you can donate towards our campaign, because we don't have the deep pockets Fine Gael have. We don't have a mass amount of funding. We rely just solely on your donations. So please do help me to get elected. I've only got 2.5 weeks left. If you can do anything at all, you think, if you can put a big poster up on the side of your building, if you can, I don't know, give out leaflets, whatever it is, you can send us a WhatsApp message at 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Don't forget, by the way, as well, we are continuing to do the podcast. We're not getting paid, and it's even worse now because I have no job. As you know, I'm running for election. I can't be on the radio at the same time, so I'm not getting paid either. So completely, money is now gone. We want to keep up the podcast. Please help us with the podcast separately. I know I'm like a beggar, but nileboylan.com. That's nileboylan.com. If you can go there and subscribe to our podcast, you can watch all the previous podcasts that we've done over the last year. There's over nearly 300 of them now at this stage. So please do subscribe and do support us. I shall be back again with you tomorrow at 12, at the usual time tomorrow. So please join us at 12 o'clock tomorrow. You never know what we could be talking about. Until then, have a great evening.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.